ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Daniel Johansson. Daniel is a researcher and analyst at the Linnaeus University in Sweden, as well as at the Spotify-backed company Soundtrack Your Brand, which he represents in FuturePulse, an EU-backed 3 million euro-funded project. His research is focused on the music industrial economy and organization, as well as business economics within the music industry, with a particular focus on streaming and digital distribution. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
People often like to think that art and music, these things are distinctly human and personal and ultimately unknowable or unpredictable. But FuturePulse is actually working to create a technology platform that accurately predicts trends on social media and streaming platforms, and as a result, the commercial performance and potential of artists, tracks, albums, up to 12 weeks in advance. From where I sit, like, wow, that's a bit of a moonshot goal, but it's underway and you're making really interesting progress. But first, before we get into where you are with that progress and how it all fits together, can you tell us just a bit about how the program came to exist and how long you've been working on the research?
Yeah, sure. There is a huge program in Europe called the Horizon 2020 that is financed by the EU. And in 2015, there were a bunch of music industry actors, a record label called Playground Music, who is the largest independent label in the Nordic countries, and a Greek institute, and also a company called BMAT, which is quite known within the music industry since they are collecting information on airplays and radio and broadcasting around the world for collecting societies like ASCAP or BMI. And we were discussing a bit about statistics and data and the problem of big data. Before the internet and before streaming services and social media, it was quite straightforward to try to understand different target groups and so on. But when these new platforms were released, we got so much data that it almost became impossible.
Right. So it's not even a data lake, it's a data ocean. There's just so much.
Yeah, exactly. So the purpose of the whole project was to try to use all this data in providing knowledge. I mean, that was the basis of it. So we made an application, a proposal for the EU to make this research project, and we got approved. And in 2017, we started this research project with eight different actors in Europe, trying to develop technology that would work as tools and support when making decisions within the music industry.
Given that it is funded by the EU, is it a public website? Can anyone access the learnings and the tools?
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's, I think, is one of the things that really is different with this project, is that all the results of the project is online at futurepulse.eu. So all the scientific reports, in journals and conferences, all the deliverables, everything is online. So it's basically, it's up for grabs for anyone who wants to replicate this technology. But also,
but not the data sets, right? I mean, it's
exactly,
it's just the results. And are you actually publishing your algorithms or no?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a demand from the EU that we publicly describe how it's working. Yeah. But of course, as you say, the data sets and the databases and also the code that we have done for the demonstrator that is online now, that is something that is proprietary for us, of course. But it's a bit different from running a commercial company in that sense, because getting funded by the EU means that you have to reveal the results. In
yeah. Dang, but you got to share what you got. So that's great. We're going to have a link in the podcast show notes to the FuturePulse website where people can find some of these papers. you were quoted in Music Business Worldwide as saying the holy grail of the music industry today, recorded or live, is to be able to detect trends in social media and on streaming services very early, and to use those signals as well as historic data to predict what's going to happen with certain genres, artists, and songs in specific markets. Now, I see how that supports existing players and how they could get on board, but I'm curious about how new musicians or acts feel about it, and how those stakeholders who aren't already in the game, how, you know, are they, do they feel like they're going to be able to get a leg up, or are they going to feel like they're boxed out? And were you dealing with like the big boys or indie labels? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, the results now, I mean, it's just a couple of weeks since we released the demonstrator platform, which is a limited public version where anyone can go in and create an account and test an open version of the technology. Since then, we had a lot of interest, both from, I would say, major large companies and small companies, and even do-it-yourself artists. Now, the main purpose from the beginning was really towards the independent sector. And by the independent sector, I mean... it could even be quite large companies, but still not a part of these international conglomerates that are working on a global level, because they have the resources to create these kinds of automatic signaling when a song is starting to climb on a playlist, or they can define thousands of playlists to follow and get a detailed overview of when a certain genre is increasing in the most popular playlists and so on. So basically, it was kind of a try to start to level the playing field when it comes to big data and using data for making business decisions. Now we will see what happens with the technology. So, I mean, that was kind of the purpose and still is. And without revealing any details, we've been having meetings with the independent organizations in the world about how to use this technology in the best way. And we will see what happens. I mean, it's still very early. This research project ends in December. But for me, this thing starts now, so to speak.
Well, that's, I mean, what I had read, it also seemed like you're currently able to predict some popularity. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sure.
And so what are some of the trends or factors that are starting to merge around popularity? Like what are you seeing as signals that are starting to pop?
Yeah, the most important thing is to handle what we call the cold start problem, where you don't have so much information about the track or an artist. So what we need to have is a system that is learning. So it's basically a machine learning, deep learning techniques to understand and learn from former success stories. Mm-hmm. And that is the difference between just having a graph that you follow over, Spotify streams or Facebook mentions or YouTube channel views over time for one artist, and say that, okay, here we can see that this artist is working in this way on this social media. But it's much more difficult to compare hundreds or thousands of artists and see and let the machine learn where the correlations between especially social media and streaming services. And this is, I mean, kind of...
Well, you're able to identify things that happen in advance of an actual trend, right? That's when you're talking...
Yeah.
And what I'm curious, though, is how do you know that these are real correlations and not just random, like the per capita cheese consumption in a country tracks with how many people are strangled by bed sheets. You know, I mean, that it isn't completely unrelated.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to make these correlations. I should say that even though we're talking about automating this holy grail, this finding early signals and trends, it is still about knowledge, and that's been the core goal of this project all the way, is to help people to learn themselves. I mean, we're not going to come to a situation where someone is just going to be able to push a button and then the next hit will happen and you get...
So it's not going to replace your A&R person?
No. So, I mean, you still have to have the knowledge and know-how and understanding in-house, even regardless if you're a major company or an indie company. But sometimes it's really almost scary to see how the predictions work. For example, Cardi B released the news about the divorce from Offset earlier this fall. And our system predicted 4 or 5 weeks in advance that something would happen during that time. And that was based on both all the activity that has happened around Cardi B, but also on similar artists and so on. So what you see is that, and I mean,
so it's almost like it notices human behavior patterns because it has exactly. such a large data set that something was going on, and it was, and it could, I guess I'm curious when thinking about the signals, like that it was picking up signals. And if this type of machine learning is actually almost like a neural net where we don't actually have an insight into what it is that triggers the machine to know that something's happening, but it just tells us that it is happening. I mean, how much window are you able to understand what the machine is learning, and how much is it's just doing its thing?
Yeah, it's we have limited the prediction window to 12 weeks. And of course, 2 weeks is very much easier to predict than 12 weeks. What is interesting is when you have a system that is starting to predict the unpredicted. If you have a steady line on a graph, things are just happening. Like, for example, the let's say the ABBA catalog or a large catalog that's just ticking away, you know, day after day after day. That's one thing. But when you are starting to try to predict things that you can't know in advance,
those guys doing the reaction video to the Phil Collins song. All of a sudden, Phil Collins, this whole group of kids who had no idea what that was, they go to it. So it would pick up. How would it even know that that video had to do with Phil Collins? Like, how does that even work? How is it tagged?
Yeah, to be honest, what we have found is that it is not random, and in a sense, it is also a result of human activities. I mean, the fact that we can see all these peaks in social media and on streaming services and predict them could also be according to a marketing plan that a label has formed a year ago. So what we're picking up is actually the time sequences in this marketing plan when the company has decided that this is the best time when we should do this activity. So in a way, it's kind of also benchmarking technology where you can kind of have espionage on your competitors.
Well, it's interesting. There were two kind of related questions. One was, can the knowledge start to change the result? You know, because people are informed, they behave in certain ways and it nudges the results in certain other ways. Or alternatively, when you were talking about the marketing and that it seems to be, you know, working, is this going to become kind of like a KPI for marketing plans for artists that, you know, if you're doing your job well, we should start to see stuff happen on these indicators.
And this is actually something that we have tested within the project. So based on a whole label's catalog, about 50,000 tracks, mm-hmm. we have tracked all the data historically and seen what works and when stuff should be put on Facebook and what kind of stuff and what kind of TV events, etc.
Oh my gosh.
That are influencing. And then it means that the person sitting as responsible for marketing or the A&R can see that, okay, the system predicts that in 3 weeks we should do something on Facebook, or we should do this media appearance, or we should release a new video or whatever, you know. So that's the core thing of what we want to do, is to create this kind of tool where you package the knowledge into the data and get kind of tips on what you should do in the future.
Right. Well, a few questions. So you have your social, it's sort of social listening. You have some of the social listening happening. When I sat at a company and we looked at social listening, one of the things that was tricky was each platform has their idiosyncratic audiences, like Twitter is older, or, you know, TikTok is super young, and it was super new when I was working on it. At what point is something determined to have crossed the threshold where you're going to include it in your analysis? I mean, this is one of the questions that I've been asking a lot of people, and nobody has a really great answer as to, you know, you've got nascent social platforms happening. When do you know that you really should start paying attention to them?
Well, I mean, that's where humans come into into the equation. You have to somewhere. You have to have this kind of, you know, human touch into what kind of platform, what kind of. I should stress that. I mean, the core focus of this project has been to develop the prediction models and the algorithms behind. It has not been to build a fancy platform.
Right.
Actually, that is hopefully the next step from this project. Mm. I mean, we have chosen a limited set of platforms. We have Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have SoundCloud. Mm. And a couple of others. So we don't have TikTok, for example, but we have not needed it because of the purpose of the project was to develop as robust as possible algorithms, you know.
I see.
But as it becomes
a discovery platform, increasingly with certain, you know, sort of like in America, it's become more and more of a discovery platform for, you know, 13 to 39 year olds. Will it be brought into the algorithm? I mean, is that something that can be added? Is the algorithm flexible that you can rotate these sources?
Sure. The problem with TikTok is that the recommendation algorithms behind TikTok is working totally different from Spotify and YouTube, for example.
Oh.
On TikTok, you can have a totally unknown TikToker getting in the same feed as the biggest ones, you know.
Mm.
And that is seldom happening on YouTube or Spotify, where popularity is actually a very...
I see. So it isn't. So it almost isn't a useful feed, because although it's creating exposure, it isn't a signal for existing popularity.
Exactly. So on TikTok, it's the meme that is the popular thing. It's not the person, so to speak, or the song even. It's the meme. So if the meme is replicated by someone that is fitting your user profile, that is of course stored somewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That profile then is connected to that meme, and it doesn't matter if the person have, you know, 10 followers or 10 million followers.
Right. Have you noticed, are there regional or geographic or generational differences? I had read some studies that young consumers currently are the most generationally consistent, and that they have geographically broad tastes, which is to say the young consumers' musical tastes in America and Denmark would have more in common with each other than they would with someone who is older, but from their own country. Is that a thing that is true, and are you seeing that?
Yes, we actually have a paper on it.
Ooh,
so
we
published an article where we have analyzed similarities between markets, and you'd be surprised to see that there are strange correlations between. I was not myself a part. I mean, we are 20 people in this project, so I was not myself a part of writing this article. So I don't know all the goodies in it, but. Be surprised to see that some countries from Asia can correlate to a Nordic country, and then you have the US connecting to an African country, or you know, it's very interesting to see, based on all the data that we have collected, to see how consumption and popularity might not be as fixed as you might think around borders, but it is actually flowing quite interesting around the world.
Right. I'm curious, you have data sets, and I'm presuming that this means play streams, right? How granular are they all equally granular in what they give to you, even though you're super secret and don't share with anybody else. But do you have, so that you can then parse that stuff by market and things like that, or no? I mean, because I know that, let's say Apple doesn't share super granular data.
Well, the granularity is based on what the data that the labels get.
Okay.
So when the label gets detailed data on the market.
So do you get it through the label? Is that your source of the data, is from the label versus the, like, rather than having Spotify give it to you, you get it from?
Yeah, either the label or the distributor. Now, the thing is that in end of July, Spotify closed down Spotify Analytics, the API, which meant that that source of data was closed down, and which is logical. I mean, Spotify is as all the other platforms starting to see how they can profit on their data.
Right.
So this is totally logical. Of course, it means a little bit harder work for the labels and other actors like us to handle the data.
Mm.
But in the end, I would say that as long as the labels get the detailed data, it's possible to crunch it. Either it is the labels themselves doing it, if you're a major label, or you can use platforms like ours or ShotMetric or SoundCharts or SpotOnTrack or any other of the aggregating platforms out there.
Oh, I see. Right. Huh. So, you are working on a particular use case, Soundtrack Your Brand, and that's the music platform use case. And can you describe how that fits into the overall picture?
Yeah. When we started the project, we wanted to find three use cases that was three narrow use cases within the music industry. So it became the independent record label, a music festival, and a background music provider.
Mm.
And I guess one of the reasons why we chose them was because it was in the network. It was use your friends, you know.
Yeah.
But for Soundtrack Your Brand, if you look at the requirements that was put into the project from the beginning, one thing, for example, is recognition scores, which is quite important, which is something else than popularity scores. So, for example, you can have a situation in the middle of the summer where Mariah Carey, "All I Want for Christmas," is very, very, or is kind of low in popularity, but very, very high in recognition score. But then when it comes to Christmas, you have a very, very high popularity score, which is even larger than the recognition score. And that is a very good tool for making playlists for background music providers, because a lot of research have shown that recognition levels of the music is important both for the ones that are, the customers in the stores, and also for staff, staff satisfaction. So that was one thing. And also energy levels of the music. Of course, genre popularity is really, really important for the background music use case, to be able to see in advance that this will probably happen with this genre in the coming 2 months, or this has happened and this is happening right now, to form your playlists depending on what genres that are moving in popularity.
Now, is this, so Soundtrack Your Brand, is that also sort of open source, available to anybody, or is this a paid service? I mean, it seems like,
no,
holy smokes, how great for different businesses to be able to tap into it. And it's such a business opportunity. So tell me, you're making something out of it there.
Soundtrack Your Brand is a commercial company that was, actually the name was Spotify Business. So it was Spotify's, you could say, sub company. So it is still partly owned by Spotify.
Okay.
So it's, it was people from Spotify that started this company. Now we have our own platform that we have developed. A new pretty large investor into the company is from the US, Rocker.
Mm-hmm.
So, for Soundtrack Your Brand is kind of a, I mean, having the possibility to use these technologies, of course, something that is competitive towards other background music platforms in the world. So I would say that, I mean, although this project has been or still are quite open with its results, in the end, the commercial implications and how the technology will be used will be within the will be within the borders of different companies. But we welcome anyone to contact us with suggestions on how to proceed.
Well, I'm curious. The other thing that, as somebody who has a background in visual entertainment mediums, and I'm curious how applicable this is. This obviously, you developed this around music, but it seems like the signals would be very similar to if I'm rolling out a new season of a show, or if I'm launching a film, that these same, that a lot of the learnings from this could apply there. Or is that not, I mean, is that not so?
It is so. It is clearly so. So, what we have done now is focused on music. This is really a music industry focused project. But I think that the results could be used by other kind of cultural artifacts or other media businesses as well, as long as you have the kind of correlation between social media and streaming services, etc. But I mean, the models themselves are quite open when it comes to the how to make predictions, basically, and are, I mean, it's based on former research done in predictive analytics.
Right. Well, so when you were talking, because I'm thinking, okay, well, what would convince somebody like Netflix, who has a pretty robust data pool that they can use for themselves, what would convince them to participate in something like this? Which then makes me think, how were you able to convince the labels to participate? Like you had said, that people are going to say, oh, this is, I can watch their marketing plan and I can attack it or counteract it. Why? I mean, is it that people are like, well, we're going to participate for a little while and then we won't? Or how do you get people to sign up?
Well, I think,
let me rephrase it. How did you pitch it to them?
Yeah, it's kind of it is a research project, and to be honest, I would say that many labels and companies around here are quite open in collaborating and trying to find new solutions and so on. So it's not so much competing, but rather about. And to be honest, I mean, one of the core things from the EU that is even written in the texts and the instructions for this project is that we should do this to compete with the US.
Right. So well, I suppose that's where I was thinking in entertainment. You've got some behemoths and you have local, you know, industry wanting to move against it. So this has been so interesting. And I thank you for sharing and spending time in conversation with me. What's up next for you? What's the next iteration?
Yeah, the next thing is that we're doing a hackathon. Actually, today we were discussing what teams to select. There's a little prize in it as well. So we're doing a hackathon in a couple of weeks in November. We'll have a large webinar in the end of November, and then we will conclude the project. And after that, I cannot tell you exactly what is going to happen, other than there's going to be a continuation.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was very nice.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.